All right, good evening. Tuesday night Bible study on the book, 10 Lies Satan Loves to Tell. So I think tonight we are on lie number 3, correct?
Yes.
You need and deserve more. That's not a lie, is it? I think we actually do need more, don't we? No. I like the way he started out, Pastor Jones started out on page 54. With all of those advertising slogans. I remember most of those. Have it your way. Yeah. Double your pleasure. Double your fun. Expect more. Pay less. I don't remember the L'Oreal one, because you're worth it. That one doesn't ring a bell to me, but... Yeah. The end of that first section. The insatiable human desire that we all have for more, more, more. Yes. That's what this lie is built upon, that we want more. We never seem to be satisfied, do we? And you see it especially maybe in culture about people who get rich, maybe, doing something. I know I've had this discussion with my kids before about, like in the last couple of decades, the wealthy are generally have invented something of technology. So we were talking about Elon Musk, and oh, he started out by, he invented PayPal, then sold it, and then started another company, and then sold it, and started the, you know, and they said, when is enough enough? And I said, yeah, I agree. When is enough enough? You have to keep driving for more? So, yeah, we always seem to, in our human nature, want more. Bottom of page 54. She currently is not like God in that one particular way, so she is missing out. There is more to be had, and that more is so easily accessible. Just do it, Eve. So there's another slogan for you, just do it, from Nike. So I think that's what the devil, what Satan is preying upon here, is Eve's desire for more, and Adam's as well. Top of the next page, as we have noted already, the problem is that in becoming more like God in this one way, Eve will lose her likeness to God in many other ways. I found that very insightful. Was it just the last chapter or the one before that where Pastor Jones mentioned that? I think he's going to be bringing that up periodically in the book. But that there is one way we're not like God, or Adam and Eve in their perfection were not like God, and that they didn't know good and evil. But they were like God in so many other ways, which they lost. So they became like God in one way, knowing good and evil, but no longer were like God in a whole bunch of ways, because they lost their holiness, their perfection. The advertising slogan, "You will be like God," turns out to be both true and false. Yes, isn't that true for so many advertising, so many advertising slogans? Burger King says, "Have it your way." Well, if I go in there and say, "Well, I would like it with bacon and an olive burger with," and they say, "No, sir, we don't have that. You can't have it that way. You can only have it one of these ways." So it's, you know, true and false. Right in the middle, Satan's desired outcome. Satan's desired outcome with this lie is that we are never satisfied, that we consume and devour as much as we possibly can. And then the inset there on the bottom of the page, which is actually a highlight from what's right next to it to the left, Satan hopes that we will look at what God has given us and dismiss it as not enough or not good enough. Boy, doesn't that ring true? That rings true for me so much.
You know, when I was reading this, it made me think of social media and how back when we were young, it was like keeping up with the Joneses.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Joneses are, you know, living these incredible lifestyles.
Yeah,
and
right.
And we always are so more desirous of that.
Right. More desirous of what we don't have. Grass is always greener, right? Yeah. You always want more or something else. Page 56, the first full paragraph there. "In this way, Satan seeks to move our desires out of alignment with God's desires. Then Satan seeks to move our desires into alignment with his own evil desires." I highlighted that because that, to me, that was a good insight from Pastor Jones, and it made me think, you know, I'll write a little note to myself. Satan rebelled against God. Why? We know this from the first week. He wanted to be God, right? Satan wanted to take over the responsibility, the position of God. And God said no. So he kicked him out of heaven. So here is a way Satan is getting to be more like God, by changing our alignment from being in alignment with God's will to being in alignment with his will. Being discontent with what God has given us and wanting more. So that puts us into alignment with Satan, which thereby makes him God over us. Yeah? I thought, wow. So Satan, for a little time here on earth, is getting his way that he's creating himself to be God over at least some humans, some of us, that are discontent with what we have. I think all of us are discontent with something at some time or another during our lives. So the next paragraph, Satan seeks to make God's people selfish, gluttonous, and addicted. Satan wants people who are unable to restrain themselves. Oh, self-control. That's a big issue, especially for young people, isn't it? A lot of times as you grow in life and experience and age, you gain a little bit better ability for self-control. But certainly young people, you see it in preschoolers and young students, and they just don't have the self-control. Well, I can't point the finger at them, because then what am I doing? Three fingers pointing back at me. When it comes to chocolate, I have no self-control. So this absolutely applies to me with certain food items. And I say that tongue-in-cheek, but also seriously. I'm like, why do I always want more of, you know, what I like? The fear behind the lie, page 56. The fear behind this lie is the fear of missing out, a fear of scarcity, a fear of being deprived. I think that's true, isn't it? We want more and more, and then what do we, we're afraid of not having enough, so what do we do with our discontent and our fear of missing out, our fear of scarcity? We end up hoarding, right?
Well, more than that, coveting, stealing.
Coveting, stealing, right. Absolutely.
To get what you want.
Yeah. And it really comes down to not having contentment, doesn't it? We need to be content with what we have. Middle of page 57, again, that inset part, that highlighted part, which comes from the paragraph right next to it. Satan wants us focused on what we lack, not on what we have, not on the good gifts God has given us. Jesus does that a lot in the parables. He turns them around and gives us a new perspective. Instead of saying, well, I don't have that, I don't have that. Instead, you say, but I do have that, and I do have that. And look how much of that I have. You know, instead of looking at what you don't have, instead, consider what you do have and what a blessing it is. And so we turn things around sometimes. Let me pause. Any other thoughts or comments so far? Yeah,
Pat. Pastor, when you're talking about not having enough, you know, when they ask a rich man or a rich person, When will you have enough? When I get just a little bit more.
Yeah, right. The answer is always just a little bit more. And then you get a little bit more, and is that enough? No, just a little bit more. Yeah, it kind of goes on forever. All right. The lie repeated in the Bible, the parable of the wedding feast. So I think that's one that shows contentment versus discontentment, or a desire for prestige, a desire for notoriety. And instead, Jesus says, just be humble, sit at the lowest place, and then you'll be exalted when the host comes in and says, no, move up. But if you sit at the one of the best places, then he's going to say, oh, you need to move down because someone else is here. So it's kind of a discontentment or contentment with your prestige. And I see that in today's world, too, a lot.
But, you know, it makes me think of, like, the sins of the Pharisees, where they might say, well, I'm sitting as far down as possible because I'm much more holy than you are. So, therefore, you know, if you take pride in it.
Yeah.
Martin Luther had trouble because he said, well, I'm prideful in my confession, so I need confession.
Yeah.
Pridefulness.
Yeah. Right. We can be proud of the fact that we're humble.
Right.
And then you've just ruined your humility.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly right. All right, page 58, just near the top there. It sounded foreign in Jesus' day as well. One of the things people in Jesus' day wanted more and more of was prestige. People wanted to appear as though they were the most important, the most honorable. I see that today as well, not just among kids or young people, but even adults as well. We're trying to take credit for things. I remember working in the business world, and the bank I worked for was going through a merger, and it was known there were going to be like 20% layoffs because of overlap between the merge of the two banks. And so there was a lot of, well, look what I did. Well, look what I did. Touting your own accomplishments. And so there was a lot of that desire for prestige, especially in front of other people. And then Jesus gives us this warning about the scribes and the Pharisees, how they want to be seen for their goodness, for what they do, for their piety. And I wrote kind of in the margin right there, we want to take more, we want more prestige, we want more attention, we want more importance for ourselves. So we kind of do that too, what the Pharisees did at some point.
Like when he says, even Jesus' disciples argued about who was greatest among them.
Yes, right. And they did it a couple of times, didn't they? Not just once. Yeah, so there it is. This lie is working right there among Jesus' own disciples. Yeah. And then there's the parable of the workers in the vineyard, page 59. He talks about that. And, you know, that always does seem unfair to us, doesn't it? Even today, and I read it, and I know how I explain it, and I know I can, you know, say, well, Jesus is, the vineyard owner is being generous. So the ones who work the whole day, he's paying them what's fair. The ones who only work half a day or a quarter of a day, he's being generous with them. Why does that matter to the other workers? Well, because then it's not fair to them, they perceive. Well, I feel the same way. You know, doing chores, and I'd work on chores, you know, for a certain period of time, and my sisters would do chores only half the amount of time, and, well, I should get double credit than they should, you know, and it's kind of a childish behavior, but yet that's what's going on here. What we perceive is fair, and so what we deserve is more. So page 60, the end of that first partial paragraph, these laborers believe they deserve more. They are insulted by being made equal to people who worked only 1 hour, and yet they are being paid a fair wage.
Well, it's also what they agreed upon.
And it's what they agreed upon. So, and by the way, one of my explanations for this, if I, on the rare occasion where I've preached on this maybe once or twice, or it's come up in a Bible study. So one part of the main part of the parable is just to say the vineyard owner is generous. Is our vineyard owner God generous? So yes, the illustration here that Jesus is saying is somebody who's been a Christian their entire life and worked hard at fighting their sin and confessing their sins, and they worked their entire life, and they get the reward, the pay, of being in heaven. Somebody who converts and becomes a Christian right at the end of life, and so they've only worked at being a Christian, you know, trying to strengthen their faith and confess their sins for only the last little bit of their life, and they get the same pay we get. Yes, because God is generous. So it's not like you get a double portion of heaven. That's kind of silly. So that's the illustration here. But something that I put forth in this as well, the person who's worked the whole day in the vineyard, or the Christian who's been a Christian their entire life, you do get something beyond what the other person gets who only worked 1 hour or was only a Christian for the end of their life. What you get is the sense of peace for your whole life. So the workers who worked the entire day, starting at the beginning of the day, they knew they were going to get paid. They had the assurance, they had the confidence, they had the peace. They're going to finish the day and get paid and be able to go to the market and buy bread for their family to eat. The workers who only worked the end of the day, They're nervous during the day. Is anybody going to hire us? Am I going to find work? Am I going to get paid for today? So they're anxious throughout the day. The same thing might be said of somebody who's a Christian for their whole life. Yes, there is some work involved in being Christian, fighting temptation and all. But you have the assurance you're going to be in heaven. And so you have that peace throughout your life of knowing where your eternity will be. Versus somebody who's converting late in life might be anxious about what's in eternity. What is it? I don't know what's going to happen. You know, and so they live with that lack of peace. Okay? Does that make sense? But yes, the main part of Jesus' parable is that God is generous. All right. Bottom of page 60. Satan stirs up discontentment in the laborers who have worked all day, even though they receive exactly what was promised, as you mentioned and pointed out, Andy. Top of the next page, page 61. When the vineyard owner comes calling for laborers the next day, how many of these laborers who worked all day will refuse to go into the vineyard for this owner? How many will carry their begrudging discontentment with them? How many will fall for Satan's lie instead of being content in the owner's promise? That's, again, another insightful thought. What about the next day? The vineyard owner comes back looking for more workers because the harvest is still going on. And the ones who worked all day are like, I'm not going to go to the market and get hired yet. I'm going to wait until the end of the day. And then what are they risking? Not getting hired at all. So they think, I'm going to be one of those. I'm just going to work the last hour of the day and get paid a full day's wage. You might not get hired. So there's a problem. Okay? All right. Yeah?
No. You hear the vacuum going?
Yeah.
Oh, did you think you were hearing things? You got to turn your hearing aid up? All right, the lie repeated in our world. We see this lie play out every day in ways that have become commonplace. Yes, advertising, right? Advertisers play on our desire for more. So down at the bottom of, kind of the middle paragraph there at the end, when we try to purchase friends, prestige, or glory through the giant TV, it cannot deliver. How did he know I wanted a giant TV? I don't know. He wants one too. Yeah, there you go. We may subconsciously look to such purchases for more than they can give, and we end up discontented. So when we want more and more of this or that, more pleasure, more goods, more house, a bigger house, more car, a nicer car, sometimes we're actually looking for the prestige that comes with it, or for the friendships that might glom onto that we could kind of impress people around us, or we might be looking for, you know, something other than the actual thing itself. We're trying to fill something that's missing, that we feel is missing in our lives. All right. Next page. Oh, I thought this was interesting. You can tell it's a fairly recent book. He wrote this in what, 2024? Because on the top of page 62, he says, this played out during COVID. What did everybody covet and want more of and then hoard?
Toilet paper.
He talks about that. I thought, yeah, I was in that boat too. You know, we had probably enough toilet paper for a month. But the fact that, the stores were running out and everybody was getting it, and Bob Wolfinger said, oh, we're getting a delivery of toilet paper tomorrow afternoon. So I went and bought another pack. Did I need it? No. But I wanted to have it just in case, because everybody else is. It's going to be scarce. Yeah, that was this lie right here. Right?
Just recently with milk. There are people buying milk. I saw the news a couple days ago where one person bought 140 gallons of milk.
How can you keep it? They go freeze it?
I have no idea. They showed the cart was all full of milk, but they were because.
And he mentions eggs too in here, because eggs were a little bit scarce and expensive there for a while, right? There was the bird flu or whatever it was that was causing problems.
Do you remember Y2K? Everybody went out and bought water.
Oh, I remember that too, yes, Y2K. And I will tell you, on the night of December 31st of 1999, I filled my bathtub with water. Just so that, you know, clean bathtub, put the drain down, fill it up with water just in case. Well, in case something happens tomorrow, at least we'll have enough water in the bathtub that we can use it to drink for a day or two.
We bought a 12-pack of bottled water.
You're like, whatever.
And that was enough?
Yeah.
Yeah. In Michigan, you can just go out and scoop some snow and let it melt, right?
Yeah. Go to the river. Well.
Yeah, don't go to the river.
No. Yeah, right.
Not this one.
He also mentions flour was hard to come by and feta cheese was... I don't remember those shortages.
I remember the tomatoes shortage.
Mm. Tomatoes.
Where's he from?
California.
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah. Because here, we don't care about feta cheese so much, right? All right, so right in the middle of page 62, the desire for more and more derives from a mindset of scarcity. Yes, and it drives us to hoard. Probably we've all known or ourselves have been hoarders. I remember as a youngster, I would hoard, various toys or candy. Or my wife will still find chocolate stashed away in various spots in our house. And I'll say, oh, I forgot about that. She said, well, it's starting to turn white. And I, yeah, okay, you can throw that out. Yeah, so we tend to do that, don't we? I mean me. I don't know about you guys. All right, right in the middle of 63. So we so often choose a pretend superiority, which is just another version of this lie. We pretend we are better than these other churches, these other Christians. So we deserve better too. We deserve more. Does this happen in the church? I think it does. I can tell you I'm proud of being a Lutheran. Because we strive to teach correctly Holy Scriptures. So is that sinful pride? Or is that... justified.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's maybe some of each. It's both true and false. You know, it's good that we as a church body try to teach correctly Scripture, all of Scripture, on all topics. But we can't let that say that we're therefore somehow superior to those other Christians or those other church bodies that don't teach correctly. Because we have just as many sins as they have. It might be different sins, but we have just as many sins. So I think it's good to, you know, strive to teach correctly, but we can't let that influence our pride in ourselves, that we're better or more than those other church bodies. Right in the middle, just below middle, behind the desire for more is a desire for less. We hope for fewer obstacles and challenges in life. We often think that having more money and more stuff will bring about a life that is all ease and no drama. But that simply is not the case. So we want more so that we don't have to worry about having less. Right? Again, that's kind of pointing to the scarcity of things.
And he's talking about having, you think it's going to be better, like if we had a private jet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd be like, oh, we'll just check, but then there's problems that go along with that as well. So you'd have less problems figuring out how to travel, but you'd have more problems in other ways.
Yes, that's absolutely right. So, yes, when you do have more stuff, you do end up with more problems as well. All right. So, down at the bottom of page 63 and on to page 64, he mentions this documentary called Broke. I tried to find it, and I couldn't. There's actually a movie called Broke that's talking about cowboys breaking horses. Different kind of broke. And then I found that there is an ESPN documentary about professional athletes filing for bankruptcy because they've lost all their money or wasted all their money. So I think that's what he's referring to. But it didn't have the title broke, so maybe it does have a subtitle somewhere in there I couldn't find. I wanted just to see what he's talking about. But we've all heard about this, right? You know, a professional athlete gets paid millions of dollars over a short period of time because, you know, you're really at your prime athletically, say in your 20s, so you got maybe a decade or so. And then you retire, and so you've got $5 million, and you retire. Nothing to do. So what do? You start frittering it away. And eventually you go broke if you don't manage it properly. So I did see somewhere, as I was kind of searching a little bit, that the NBA and the NFL, so two of the sports leagues that maybe have some higher paid athletes, are trying to have some financial seminars for rookies on how to manage their money better so they don't go broke. Because all of a sudden you give a 21-year-old a pot of $5 million and they don't know what to do with it. And they start buying private jets or, you know, mansions or whatever, and then they can't sustain it.
Well, now you got it in college.
Yeah, now you got it in college, right.
I saw a documentary where they had that seminar for rookies, but they also talked about what's later, talked about your family, and everybody wants you to foot their bill.
Yes, you get a bunch of moochers, starting with your family, right?
Yep.
I've often thought, well, if one of my kids will strike it rich someday, maybe they'd do mom and dad a favor and pay off our house for us. Well, what? That's stupid. Why should I think that? It was just a fleeting thought, by the way. Just real brief. But then he also mentions how you have the same kind of phenomenon happens with people who win the lottery. You win the lottery, you win $10 million, and then you get all kinds of moochers show up and charities, you know, give us this, give us that, and you start spending freely, and then all of a sudden, after just a handful of years, you won $10 million and it's gone. There's nothing left. That made me think of another Bible verse, which I'm going to bring up in another couple pages when we get there. Another scripture verse to consider for meditation, which he did not put in here. So while I've been very impressed with Pastor Jones on his writing, that's one little flaw that he neglected. Now, salting your interest, we'll get there in just a moment, okay? So page 64, the truth. The truth is, we do not have to seek more and more because our God is the creator and sustainer of the world. He has given us all that we need to support this body and life and still takes care of us. Doesn't that sound familiar from the catechism? Yes. God gives us everything we need. His invitation is to pray, give us this day our daily bread. So, in that quote there from Matthew chapter 6, don't be anxious saying, what shall we eat or what shall we drink or what shall we wear? God will provide that for us. That reminds me of when God provided manna when they were wandering the wilderness. And what were they told to do? Collect one day that they needed. That was it. How much do you need for today for you and your family? And if they collected too much, what would happen to it?
Worms.
It would get maggots. So the very next day, it's no good. But God would provide the next day for the next day. With one exception. The day before the Sabbath, they were to collect a double portion. What you need today and what you need tomorrow for the Sabbath. And by the way, it has been speculated on the flavor of manna, because it's briefly kind of alluded to the flavor of manna, that it tasted like coriander and honey. So if you ever think, well, I'd get so bored of just eating dry, plain crackers, you know, made out of manna. Well, no, actually, it supposedly had a very pleasant taste, okay? Although you'd still probably get bored of it, I suppose. That's why they started complaining they wanted meat, right? All right. So top of page 65, Jesus' invitation is to trust that God will take care of us and to be content with what we have and not to seek after more and more and more and more and more and more. Whether we are seeking more money, more honor, more fame, or more power, Jesus tells us to stop. So more fame. We want attention. Do people want attention? Not just kids. Kids want attention. Mom, look at me. Dad, look at me. Look what I did. Yeah, they want attention. But we want attention too. We want attention from each other. And more power. That's more control. We want to do the things we want to do, not what somebody else wants to do. So again, it's not just for children, it's for adults too. We want more of whatever. We want more pleasure. We want more leisure. We want more stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of things that the devil can tempt us, and you might say, well, I'm content with what I have in this area. I can tell you, when I went to the seminary, I came to realize having a nice car was really no big deal. Because for a while, when we started the seminary, we had one car. And because Jill had to take the kids, Andrew was in preschool the first year we were there, and she had to take him and pick him up. So I walked to class from our house, which was, about a mile and a quarter. So not horrible walk. But I had to leave. I knew if I didn't leave 15 minutes early, I'd nearly be late for class. So when we got a second car, and it was a beater, I paid $300 for it. It was a 1990 white Mitsubishi Mirage with like 150,000 miles on it. It had rust, but it ran. Nothing fancy on it. I was like, you know what? This is better than walking. So I became content with what I had for a vehicle, for transportation. I no longer coveted a Dodge Viper, which is what I wanted. However, even being content in one area of life, we can still have discontent in other areas of life, right? So there's part of the problem with this. You might say, well, I beat the devil on this lie in this area of my life. Yeah, but what about that area? What about that other area of life? So, we often seek all those things. Right down at the bottom of that section on page 65. No one is exempt from this lie, but it seems increasingly dangerous the more material goods and comforts we actually have. You know, I used to think that it was no big deal having a car that did not have all the fancy gadgets and stuff on it. And now I can't imagine having a car that didn't have a backup camera. It's like, okay, going back to a car that doesn't have that, it feels like something's left out. I want that.
Or roll up the windows.
Or what?
Roll up the windows.
Yeah, right. I remember Dodge Dart. You remember the Dodge Dart?
Oh, yeah.
I had one of those. You had to crank the windows. And then if it was too cold, and they couldn't crank it.
Well, what about the story of the lady in Peru?
I was just going to say that right there. Here, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep, go ahead.
Just what he said, says, she was saying that she'd pray for him, and he says, I'll pray for you too. And then she says, no, you don't understand. You have too much. I have nothing. I have to rely on God. You have too much. I'll pray for you.
Right. That was a good story. I didn't highlight that, but that was a good story in here, absolutely. I do think, and I have said this before, having too much is actually a detriment to your faith, because you start to rely on yourself. So we in America, we have too much, don't we? We're a consumer mentality. And we've been a Christian nation for a long time, but that's dwindling. There's many reasons for that dwindling, for the dwindling Christian faith in America. But one of those factors is that we just have so much. We don't rely on God anymore like we should. Yeah. So when you don't have enough, you have to rely on God. When you have too much, God doesn't matter so much. Yeah.
We forget God and still take it away.
Yes, and he says that in here, doesn't he? Because I remember seeing that. And oh, I think it must be coming up. Did I highlight it? Yeah, I think so. It's coming up. So let me see. Bottom of page 65. God's desired outcome is that no matter how much we have, we trust him more and more. And he quotes Paul from Philippians. And this ends with that wonderful Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. But it starts out, that passage, that paragraph, I've learned in whatever situation I am to be content. If you have a lot, be content. If you have a little, be content. Whatever situation you are, be content. And, you know, rely on God. So page 66, right in the middle, there are some questions there. I'm gonna come back to those questions when we're talking about the questions at the end of the chapter, which is only 1.5 pages away. Because those are good questions, and I want to talk about those a little bit, get your guys' thoughts on that. Bottom of page 66. We are His creations. God has given us all that we have. God can take away all that we have in a moment. God's desired outcome is that we recognize Him as the source of what we have. So there it is. That's what you referred to, Andy. I remember Pastor Q saying once, when I was early here, you can't imagine how many ways God can take your wealth from you. There are so many ways God could take your wealth from you if it becomes an idol. And so, you know, all it takes is one sickness nowadays, and all of a sudden medical bills just drain your wealth, right? Or other things too, financial disasters, a natural disaster, you know, a tree falling on your house, who knows what. God can take your wealth and your things from you in a moment, as Pastor Jones says here, in order to remind us that our things can sometimes become an idol. So I think that's a good reminder. The love that casts out fear, page 67. Since the Lord is our shepherd, we lack nothing. And then down a little bit, God's presence casts out fear. We need not fear scarcity with Him. We need not fear missing out on what other people have. God can always provide more, right? You know what I just thought of, and I'm going to do this for tomorrow's class, and so I apologize, I'm going to just describe it to you. Carissa showed me a little meme. I didn't mention it to you, did I, Amy? Maybe I did. No. Who did I mention it to? Somebody today. Carissa, my daughter, just showed me a little meme with the little Jesus figures. You guys all have one? Or you've seen them? I handed them out here at the early in the school year, both to the school kids and to the congregation. And so it was a photo of that little Jesus with a dinner roll sitting in front of him. And then the next page showed that little Jesus figure with a whole bunch of dinner rolls and a pile of goldfish crackers. He had multiplied the bread and the fish. So there were all these rolls and these goldfish crackers. And she said, "Oh, look at this, Dad." And I said, "Yeah, that's actually kind of funny. I like it." So I'm going to ask her to send me that picture, and I'm going to put that on the screen for tomorrow's class. So you guys have to visualize it in your head. I just told you, okay?
You can see it next week.
Yeah, sure. You can see it next week. I'll show you next week. So God provides, right? He provides whatever we need, as much as we need, when we need it. Why are we so scared of scarcity in that, like, we need to gather things for ourselves and hoard for ourselves? That's a problem. All right, comments or questions?
Pastor?
Yeah.
When Don was sick, God not only provides material things, but He provides spiritual things or anything else that you need to get you through a situation.
Very true. Absolutely. So it's not just material goods. It's all the rest. Emotions and relationships and the help and the support that you need in any situation. You're absolutely right. Yep. Okay, so scripture for meditation, page 69, Psalm 23. How many of you have Psalm 23 memorized? Well, maybe I shouldn't ask. I don't want to embarrass you if you don't. I've got it memorized along with a few other psalms as well. Most people, Psalm 23 is the most well-known psalm and the most memorized one. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. What does a sheep need or worry about? Having pasture land to eat and water to drink. The shepherd provides. So the sheep doesn't have to worry about it. We are Christ's sheep. He will provide. we need not worry about it. Now, it's easy to say, hard to do, because we worry about stuff, don't we? But Jesus will provide. I shall not want. Okay, then Ephesians 3. We'll look at that real quick. Ephesians 3, 14 to 21. I think the reason Pastor Jones put this in here is the end of this passage. For this reason, I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. So you will have everything that is needed, the fullness of God. And then right here, now to him who is able to do far more abundantly than all that we ask or think, according to the power at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. Does God give us more abundantly than what we really need or even ask for?
Yes.
Absolutely. We ask for forgiveness, and he gives us forgiveness in abundance. We ask for courage. He gives us courage in abundance. We ask for love. He gives us more love in abundance than we ever even know we need. Have I ever told you guys one of my long-running thoughts for a children's message that I will probably never do? I had this. It would be an illustration both of God's generosity and of our stewardship. So I had this idea. So I'm going to paint the picture for you as an illustration, because it'll kind of remind you of this right here. Of having a children's message, and I come in with a big bag of popped popcorn that I get at Gordon Food Service. Okay, they sell them. Big bag of popcorn. And I say, do you guys want some? Yeah. Okay, then you have to ask me for some. Okay, can we please have some? Then I give them each a little cup full of popcorn and I say, now can you give me back some? And, you know, some of them may or some of them may not, or no, I'm going to keep my popcorn. Well, if you give me back a little bit, guess what? And I can fill up their cup out of the big bag so it's overflowing and pouring on the floor and say, I'll give you so much that you don't even know what to do with it. That's an illustration of God's generosity with us and our stewardship. God gives us what we have. He wants us to give back to him, to his church, to his people, for his use. And he will pour open the floodgates of heaven, it says in the Old Testament, and pour out the blessings upon us so abundantly. See, I would never do that as a children's message, because it would make a mess on the floor.
You would be in so much trouble.
Yes, I would be in trouble. Yes, I would. All right. Luke. So he's got Luke chapter 11 here. Luke chapter 11, 1 to 13. And this is the Lord's Prayer. And I think part of the reason for this is we pray, give us each day our daily bread. Now, in Matthew, it's give us this day our daily bread. But here in Luke, slightly different wording. Now, Jesus would have taught this prayer multiple times, so both are correct. But give us each day our daily bread. We don't need tomorrow's bread today because it might get worms in it, maggots in it. We need our daily bread each day. And then he goes on in this telling in Luke, he goes on to say how the one friend goes to the neighbor and asks him for help. And he eventually gives him some bread for his visitor. And then Jesus says, ask and it will be given to you. Knock and it will be opened. You know, he who seeks will find. So you ask God, will he give it to you? Absolutely. He'll give you what you need. Now, I want to close this little scripture section here with the verse that I thought of that, so far, my only slight disappointment with Pastor Jones, that he didn't think of putting this verse right here. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 8. Okay? Oh, didn't come up on the screen. Let me type it in here. Proverbs 30. I think this is a good summary of this chapter and how to fight this lie of the devil. So, verses 7 through 9. I'm going to read 7 through 9. Two things I ask of you. Deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. Proverbs. Wise sayings. Isn't it wise to say, God, give me enough, but not too much? I don't want to be poor because then I'll despair and I might go out and steal or, you know, commit crimes or things like that. I don't want too much because then I'll neglect God, I'll drift away from Him, I'll deny God. Who is the Lord? I got plenty. I want enough, but not too much. To be content. To be middle class. That's what we want, right? Yes. That's what we want. So I think that's a great sentiment to remember. Proverbs chapter 30. Okay? All right. Other thoughts or comments? Bringing it to a close.
When we talk about poverty, it's so funny what we consider poverty in America.
Yes.
In most of the rest of the world, you're like, oh, you only have one flat screen TV and, you know, you have six pairs of shoes. You're poor.
Yeah.
But in the rest of the world...
You know, and there's some of those cultural things about the 1% or the 99%. All of us in America are the 1% or a fraction of a 1%. The poorest people in America are richer than most of the rest of the world. Yeah, it's incredible. We don't realize how well we are, right? So a few of these questions for reflection. Now, I just realized this chapter, maybe you guys realized it last chapter, he's asking nearly the same questions each time, right? So he says, where do you see this lie appearing in your life? Well, that might be different for each of us. We might be desiring more attention. We might be desiring more respect. We might be desiring more prestige. We might be desiring more stuff, a bigger car, a bigger house, more vacations, whatever. So it appears in each of our lives in different ways.
Well, as you get closer to retirement, then you're more worried about, will you have enough to retire on?
There you go. So again, that's a variation of this lie too. That's absolutely true. You're right. In what situations do you find it most difficult to be content?
During times of trial.
Okay. Times of trial? When the devil's attacking you? Sure.
In the face of other people with, like I said, on the internet, you see somebody taking this lavish vacation or driving this,
right,
or living that lifestyle, I'm like, oh man.
Yeah, right.
Your neighbor looking in the crawler.
Yeah. When you see those ads on TV, oh, I wish I had that. Oh, if I, you know, maybe I could get that too. They want, that's part of the point of advertisement, is to get you to want more and more, right? Can you remember a time when you were afraid of missing out? What was it like? Afraid of missing out. Anyone? Bueller?
I think when you're younger, you're more susceptible to that. I remember going to my dad and want an answer right away, or you say, well, wait and see, you know. And sometimes it's better off. Yeah, you may lose out, but the risk is too great for what, you know, to do what you want to do. So sometimes you pass on it.
I sort of agree with you that it's a bigger issue for younger people. I remember being a kid and not getting invited to something. And my cousins had a birthday party, and because my sisters and I didn't live local to them, we weren't invited. and I felt like we missed out. It was, they went to McDonald's for a birthday party. And, you know, I'm like, well, I would have gone to McDonald's. I would have asked my mom to drive me. Yeah, I know it's a half hour away, but what? Could you at least invite me? You know, I felt like I was missing out on McDonald's. Yeah? Whom can you trust to tell you the truth when you're struggling with this lie? Same answers we've been giving. Your spouse, you know, a close friend, a pastor. Trust them to kind of talk to you about it. Can you think of other biblical characters who struggle with always wanting more?
Well, Judas is the obvious one.
That's the one I put down, was Judas. Yeah.
Well, Solomon, I actually got him to, you know, at the end, he was disobeying God, and because he had all this wealth and stuff, and he wanted, you know, wives and...
Yeah, Solomon, probably also in that category, yeah.
King David and his mistress.
Okay, King David, yeah.
The prodigal son's brother. I don't know who it is, but...
He doesn't have a name.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so you got it right.
He was always...
Bill was his name.
Lover of horses.
Yeah.
And he was desirous, the jealousy of his brother and wanted his father to...
He was jealous, you're right. We haven't used the word jealousy, but that's part of this, isn't it? Being discontent is being jealous of what someone else has. We did use the word coveting, which coveting and jealousy are closely related. There's a lot of crossover there. So that's part of this, yes, being jealous, right? I want to close by going back to page 66 and those questions right there. And I think those questions probably could have been part of the questions for reflection section at the end. And I want to know what you guys think, because I pondered this just a few minutes. In an affluent culture, which we are in, what does it look like to live faithfully when we have an abundance? How do we content ourselves when life is abundantly full with more than we need? How do we trust God more and more when we are quite comfortable? All three of those questions are related. And they all apply to us in America. Do we have more than we need? Yes. Do we live life comfortably? Yes. Are we, do we have abundantly what we need? Yeah, everything. So how do we live faithfully when we have so much? Us, right now in America.
I think part of it is just realizing that it's not a thing you deserve. Everything we had is by the grace of God. And you know, you need to remember that if somebody has somebody else that doesn't have as much as you do, it's not because you're better than they are, you're more of a Christian or whatever, it's just by God's grace.
Sure.
Not letting it become an idol. Those things you idolize, you know, technology or cars or anything like that, where you worship the wealth and the pursuit, rather using it just the way it's intended.
Yeah, right.
It goes beyond health. It can also be, it's like somebody wants to have a spouse and they can't find anyone that they can marry. Or children, grandchildren, health. You know, some people are fighting health.
Yep. All of that. That's right. So I'd put along in there making sure we're thankful all the time. Yes, reminding ourselves that it all comes from God. Reminding ourselves that God is the giver, but also being thankful. I guess I wonder also, put in there, should we strive and work at and, you know, push ourselves to be generous? So there's something we want more and more of, at least me. So this is another part of this category, is time. Are we generous with our time? Or do we crave more and more of it for ourselves? See, I'm pointing the finger at myself on this one, so I don't know how much this applies to you, but there are times where I just want my time for myself, to do what I want. Is that so wrong? Again, I think that's a case where yes and no. We need to have some time for ourselves, but if you crave too much time for yourself, you'll become lazy and complacent. and you won't be generous with your time for other people who need you. Okay? It's true for all of us.
Jesus took 40 days to be by himself.
Right. And then outside of that, before and after, mostly after, he spent a lot of time ministering and teaching and preaching and healing, right? Yeah. So we need to be content with what we have. All right, an hour's up. Any questions, thoughts? All right, let's rise and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thanks for coming. Have a good night.